Radio 4. It's 8:30. Saturday Night Theatre.
We present Freddie Jones, Hilda Schroeder, and Diana Olsen in Bertie by Lydia Ragazin. The play opens in the garden of the Royal Palace of Laeken, just outside Brussels, in September 1862. Bertie.
Let's stop here.
Yes. Why, Bertie?
Your parents have gone along ahead.
Oh, I see.
You're wearing white heather, I see.
Mm. Your mama sent it to me from Balmoral, I think.
Do you know what it's for?
To bring me luck?
I hope it will.
Yes.
What do you think of England, Alexandra?
Oh, I've never been there.
I know. What do you think of it? Would you like to go there?
Yes. Oh, yes, I would.
If you did, how long do you think you'd want to stay?
Oh, I hope I should want to stay quite a long time.
I'd want you to stay for always. Will you marry me, Alexandra?
Yes. Of course.
No, not of course. I mean, I don't mean... Believe me, I'm not asking because... Only because we're chosen for each other.
You mean if our meeting hadn't been a success, you would not have asked me?
Exactly. That's exactly what I mean.
Good. Because then I would have refused.
Alex, I had to be in love with you. I am. What do you really think about me?
That our meeting has been a success.
It has. It has. Let me kiss your hand.
Oh.
How beautiful you are, Alex. How very, very beautiful.
Oh, I'm not at all clever, you know, Bertie. I've had a very simple education.
What do I care about that? Now the other one, the other hand.
Oh. Do you think your mama will like me?
Adore you.
And do you think your father would have liked me?
My father.
Oh, it must be so sad to lose a beloved father when one is young. I suppose you think of him a great deal.
I do. It's dreadful.
Your mother and I are very disappointed in you, Bertie.
What is dreadful?
Huh?
What is dreadful?
My father expected so much of me.
Oh.
I'm supposed to know everything possible. Chemistry, Greek and Roman history, mathematics, literature, philosophy, even how to command men and lead armies. Oh,
I won't be able to talk to you about things like that. I told you I'm not clever.
Neither am I, Alex. Neither am I.
These reports on your academic progress are most disappointing, Bertie. Your tutors seem to appreciate your good nature rather than your intellectual capabilities.
What is it, Bertie?
This is a memorandum I have presented to your tutors, Bertie. They are meant to help make the Prince of Wales not merely a gentleman, but the first gentleman in the country. One, appearance, deportment, and dress. A gentleman does not indulge in careless, self-indulgent lounging ways, such as lolling in armchairs or on sofas. He will borrow nothing from the fashions of a groom or gamekeeper, and whilst avoiding the frivolities of dandyism, will take care that his clothes are of the best quality.
Chemistry, Greek and Roman history.
Two, manners and conduct towards others. A prince must always be scrupulously courteous, attentive, punctual, and on guard against the temptation to use harsh, rude, or bantering expressions.
Mathematics, literature, philosophy.
Three, the power to acquit oneself creditably in conversation, or whatever may be the occupation of society. The Prince of Wales must be induced to devote some of his leisure time to music, to the fine arts, to hearing poetry, amusing books, or good plays read aloud. In short, to anything that whilst it amuses, may gently exercise the mind.
Bertie, you seem about to cry.
I did cry.
For what? My father has never made me cry. What did yours do to you?
He made me wonder if I'd ever know what freedom meant. Now I'm going to know it at last. Liberty. And I'm going to receive it from your hands, those dear, beautiful little hands. Oh, my darling Alex. My beautiful one. Let me kiss you. Let me kiss you, please.
No, please. No, Bertie, stop. Don't. Let on.
Everything's going to be right. We'll go and tell your mama and papa everything is all right. Take my hand. Now, come.
Albert. Dear mama, why must you be so sad?
It is too much for me.
Bertie looks so handsome and proud in his garter robes.
And dear Alex, have you ever seen anyone more beautiful?
Oh, Albert, my lost one. My love. My love.
It's a good thing they can't see you up here, weeping away in the royal closet. Can you imagine how upset they'd be?
I knew it would be too much for me. I shall hate weddings forevermore. Oh,
dearest Mama, I know. I understand. Oh. Please, don't cry. Please. Dickie's son, little Wilhelm, naughty little boy. He threw something right across the aisle.
He is only a baby.
Yes, I suppose so. Anyway, Bertie and Alex took no notice at all.
Dear little Lovett, we are gathered together here in the sight of God and in the face of this congregation to join together this man and this woman in holy matrimony.
Liberty! Liberty! Liberty!
I suppose there's been nothing like this since the Regent entertained at Brighton.
Well, it's certainly what London has needed for the past 4 decades at least. A centre of gaiety and elegance, charm, joy.
I doubt if the Queen is so enthusiastic.
Why not? What is better for a nation than the sight of royalty enjoying its gaiety, charm, and elegance?
You mean it tempers the mood of the working classes and keeps their minds off their personal troubles, huh?
Of course. The Prince and Princess of Wales. A superbly beautiful and elegant couple leading the whole of society out of reach of the widow's gloom and into a new age of brilliance and pleasure. Let us idolize them. For there's very little else we have, gentlemen. Except our imagined God.
The last thing I want, Charles, is to be regarded as a mere pleasure seeker. Nothing more than the leader of a frivolous society, the Marlborough House set, I think they call us. But you know my mother's attitude. Do you know that I have to read about the Schleswig-Holstein affair in the Times, just like anyone else?
Yes.
The Queen won't let me have access to the state papers on the subject. Won't let me.
The Schleswig-Holstein affair. Yes, the Princess of Wales must be very disturbed about it.
Damn it, I am disturbed. Haven't I let my opinions be known? To support Prussia and Bismarck against the poor little Danes. It isn't good. It isn't moral.
But maybe diplomatic, sir. Your Highness's sister is Crown Princess of Prussia.
And my wife's father is the King of Denmark. Even if he weren't, I'd still see it the same way. Prussia. Nothing's enough for Prussia. One day, they'll want to control Europe.
Oh, sir.
No, you'll see, gentlemen, you'll see.
Well, one admires your keen interest in diplomacy, sir.
I could be good at it. Look at the picture. I'm either related or about to become related to every royal house in Europe. Though not the French president. Unfortunate.
Well, this country might think that's fortunate, sir.
Wrongly. Francis, my good friend here, knows a good deal about my secret passions, especially the one I have for the French. You know, don't you, Francis, that if I didn't live in Marlborough House...
Your Highness would rather live at Versailles.
No, no! At a cafe on one of the boulevards of Paris. The trouble with a democracy like ours is the British have foreign secretaries and ambassadors to do their threatening, their negotiating for them. But most of Europe's monarchs are autocrats.
Something the British monarch hasn't been for decades.
Exactly. So who would have a better chance of fostering good relations with Europe than a person who's related to damn nearly all its rulers?
A reasonable idea, I suppose.
Mm. I wish others thought so. Well, there must be something useful I could do.
Referring to history, sir.
Yes, Francis?
Making sure of the succession has always seemed a very useful thing.
Trouble is that that isn't difficult, and it doesn't take enough of my time. Also, with the princess expecting our first child, I am less usefully employed than ever. But you know, if only my wife would take more interest in my diplomatic ambitions, perhaps I'd feel more encouraged to...
Poor little thing. So small, so delicate.
He certainly isn't a robust child.
Premature babies are rarely so, Bertie.
Never mind. Now he's safely here, we shall do our best for him.
It was all the trouble and anxiety I went through.
Yes. Yes, I expect it
was. Your mother's attitude, supporting Prussia against my own poor little Denmark. Oh, it so upset me. Our poor little son might have been stillborn.
It's obvious what Prussia is planning.
I think families and loyalties and children are far more important. Don't you think so, Bertie?
The emergence of a German empire.
Bertie, must
There'd
you go on?
There'd be secret information about the Schleswig-Holstein affair. I wasn't allowed to see it.
I only know the pain it caused me nearly killed our child. The Queen was apparently quite unaware.
Perhaps I could have been useful if Mama had allowed me to know all the facts. I could have gone over to Berlin and talked to Bismarck.
Bertie.
Huh? Yes, my darling love.
You're not very contented, are you?
With you? With our charming baby son, what are you talking about?
Are you happy?
No.
Oh, I thought so.
Not with my present existence. It's futile. I look at people. I say, how do you do? Thank you. Thank you very much. Nod, bow, wave the hand. Futile. It's not work.
He's very pretty. He has your eyes.
What, my dear? Oh, yes. He's very pretty.
Talk about him to me. About our child, Bertie.
I shall love and cherish my firstborn son. Nothing shall be forced on him. He shall never, never have any reason to hate or fear his father.
Oh.
His father will never humiliate or terrify him.
What an odd thing to say. Why do you say things like that?
Has he really got my eyes? Yes, I suppose they do bulge just a little.
And they are blue as yours. Now, tell him what you are going to do for him.
Do for him? I shall let him do what he can do best in this life. For there'll be plenty of others who'll try to make him do what he likes least.
I don't quite understand what it is that you want, Bertie.
A job, Mama. What about the governorship of Canada?
You cannot be serious.
They liked me there.
It is too far away.
I've travelled more widely than any minister you've ever had. People like me, all kinds of people.
I am quite sure of that.
I thought, if I could go to Canada...
It is out of the question.
Is there a reason?
Yes, there is a reason.
What about your Privy Council, then? I'm sure I could be useful if you'd let me come on that.
No, Bertie. It is impossible.
But why?
For the same reason as always. I cannot trust your sense of responsibility. Your dearest father warned me.
My father.
But I can see for myself. Your sole interest is the pursuit of pleasure.
Pleasure? Opening hospitals, schools, exhibitions, laying foundation stones. And...
long ago, you started to smoke and you started to gamble with cards. Do you deny that?
No. But surely, Mama...
who am I presenting to the country as the heir to the throne? A pleasure-seeking gambler. You neglect your poor wife and rush about London in hired hackney cabs at all hours of the night and frequently end up at the Cremorne Gardens in Vauxhall or at Evans Music Hall.
Well, I'll be damned. You know, Mama.
I have a mother's interest in your doings as well as a queen's.
But, Mama, if you gave me the responsibility of some kind of employment...
this argument is becoming tiresome, Bertie.
Have I my father to thank for this?
Take care how you speak to me of your father.
Because I hadn't his brains, his love of learning, or even his outlook on life. He advised you never to delegate one atom of your power to me a moment before you had to.
Oh, how right he was in feeling that you alone lacked the true affection all his other children had for him.
Is that it, then? Your bitterness because I couldn't love him enough? Or are you afraid, Mama, that your affection for me is not deep enough for the trust and responsibility I've asked you to give me?
How terrible of you, Bertie, to heap such words on the burden of grief I already bear.
But, Mama, can't you understand my grief at thinking I'm being doubted by you of all people?
And don't you ever think of the many times I've forgiven you when you displeased or worried me over some indiscretion or other.
But you're prepared to leave the nation wondering.
What do you mean by that?
I'm your heir, your successor, and the whole nation sees that you don't appear to consider me worth the confidence you place in the least of your cabinet ministers.
What do you know about the feelings of the nation? What do you hear about it at your gambling parties and on the race course?
Only what I read in the newspapers, what I hear from the cab drivers of London, that the nation thinks as I do. It's time you stopped mourning for Papa or that you abdicated. Which is one thing I know about the feelings of the nation that I don't agree with.
I think my life will end more rapidly than you think. For me, it would be the greatest blessing. But for you, Bertie, I know a few more years would be desirable. That is what alarms me most, that I should go before you become ready to take my place.
I see, Mama. I understand. But if only...
ah! I know who that is. Come in, Mr. Brown.
Beg pardon, Your Royal Highness, but it's time for your tea, ma'am.
Then I shall have it immediately.
Aye. And you're looking a wee bit tired. I think a dram in our tea before we do any more business today.
You see, Bertie, here is someone who truly cares for my every comfort.
Aye, and that includes your peace and rest. So if you're willing, ma'am, we'll ask His Royal Highness if he'll mind us being aware to the blue closet where our tea is waiting.
I must always follow your advice on matters of my personal welfare, Brown. No one else understands it quite so well.
Then will you take my arm and we'll be attending to it the new.
Damn gilly, John Brown.
You're angry again, Bertie.
His insolence and self-esteem, it's beyond belief.
It upsets me when you're angry so often.
The opinion of the nation, let alone my feelings. How can't she see it?
I wish you wouldn't shroud and be so angry, Bertie.
Why shouldn't I? Have I no right to express my feelings in my own home?
Bertie, please.
Sorry. Sorry. So sorry, my dear sweet thing. My beautiful one. How's the poor dear leg today?
Oh, my limp has become quite fashionable. I've noticed several ladies imitating it.
No.
Yes, can you imagine?
Then you better to pray they never get the rheumatic fever.
What did your mamma say to you this afternoon?
It's no go.
Oh, what a pity. What will you do now?
I suppose go on trying to be useful in my own way, sit on useful commissions, preside over governing bodies. Anything a semi-intelligent peer of the realm could do just as successfully.
No one can do those things more successfully than you. Never so kindly, with so much interest in the people you help.
No.
Oh, I do hope it won't be too long before I can be at your side again, Bertie.
Yes. Not yourself yet, are you, my love?
Mm-hmm.
It's taking longer than ever this time.
It was more difficult even than with the others. A fifth baby, and it gets worse. Perhaps we shouldn't have another.
Oh, come now, don't talk like that, my precious girl. You're feeling low, that's all it is. We must do something about it. A trip abroad. Paris, hmm? Yes, that's what I shall arrange for my beautiful.
Bertie, I'm thinking of the child. What could happen to the next child?
What on earth do you mean?
I should never be as strong as I was. I know that.
Rubbish. Look at Mama. So tiny, there were eight of us.
Your Mama is as strong as a Hanoverian mare.
Strong as a...
Oh, I'm sorry to be so indelicate.
How do you know? I don't like my wife to be a little indelicate sometimes.
Oh, but to have a limp, to be going a little deaf, to be afraid of bearing another child, that's what you don't like your wife to be, isn't it?
Do you love me?
Oh, no one else. Only my children.
Then don't be afraid of me. I shall always take very great care of you. My beautiful one. Such very great care. Oh, dear, dear. Oh, no, no, Alex, sweetheart. Not still so sad. We still have five beautiful children, and here you are, looking so beautiful again. Dearest. You must not go on being so sad.
What did you say, Bertie?
I said you look very lovely. Your hair. And I haven't seen that gown before, have I?
Oh, what does it matter? I told you I was afraid for the baby. We should never have made a life that couldn't survive.
You feel so badly about it.
Bertie, we must never take the risk of having another child.
That is your wish?
The doctor said it.
Not to me. Not in those words.
It is what they meant. I am the one who knows that.
Yes. My poor darling. I suppose you do.
Oh, I know. It is a terrible thing for a wife to have this utter fear. I have loved you so much. But it's the fear. Awful fear. Oh, I shall always adore you. Kindest, dearest man. I didn't believe how kind and gentle and dear a man could be.
Will you always adore me?
Always.
I shall always love you. Remember that. Don't cry. Don't cry, my darling. I understand.
What?
I understand. Now, I'm going to send Charlotte to you. That's who you need, isn't it? I'll send Charlotte to you.
Oh, my dear. My dear.
Charlotte. Oh, bless you. Bless you.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my dearest friend. I'm afraid it's finished.
Your ordeal is finished, that's all.
He will lose interest in me.
In you? Oh, quite impossible.
Oh, you're not married, Charlotte.
Oh, I shall never marry, never.
Oh, I envy you. No. Except one's children. After the torment and ordeal is over, then you can't imagine how you ever enjoyed your life without them.
Mine will be everything to me now. My children. And my public duty.
The prince loves his children as much as you do.
But he can never make his family life the most important thing next to his duty.
Oh, that will come.
No, never. Women are an obsession with Bertie. Like hunting or tobacco with other men. Now it will get worse.
Could you not appeal to the queen? The prince is always very attentive to her wishes.
Do you think I would ever want to be the cause of a painful scene between Bertie and his mother?
But the pain to you, my dear. And if there were more scandals, like the Mordaunt affair, the Prince of Wales being subpoenaed as a witness in the divorce court. Mm.
And he was quite innocent. But, of course, his reputation was not.
I shall never forget hearing him booed at Epsom and the theatre.
Do you know, Charlotte, I think I see how I myself can do far more to protect his reputation now.
Not for heaven's sake, by condoning.
I know I must be prepared for it. Oh. He can never be changed by his mother or myself. It is too strong and deep in his nature, as it was in others before him. You must help me, Charlotte.
Of course.
I must have a friend who understands everything.
I'd do anything in the world for you.
Bertie must always keep his popularity with the people. Otherwise, he can't do his work properly. Oh, I know his friends would forgive him anything, but not the people.
Especially if they thought he was betraying you.
While I was so often pregnant, I wasn't able to be at his side long enough to stop all the gossip and scandal. Now it will be different. I shall make it impossible for anyone to suspect his relations with any woman he chooses to favor.
How can you do that?
Oh, isn't it simple? By receiving her at Marlborough House and by being openly friendly to her myself.
Oh, you dear angel. Do you really think that your sweet generosity alone can ever stop people believing what they want to believe about the prince?
But I shall not be pretending, Charlotte. Whoever Bertie chooses to make him contented will really be my friend.
Oh.
Besides, any woman he likes is bound to be charming, beautiful, and amiable. Easy to get on with.
Why, of course. And how do you want me to help?
Charlotte Knowles is always close to me and known to have my complete confidence. You can do so much, Charlotte, to make sure that the attitude of society towards Bertie's friends is what I would like it to be.
I understand.
Thank you, my dear. That's all that's needed. Understanding of those you love.
I think we have Tum Tum in very good form tonight. Full of oats.
Who's the latest filly tipped to run in the Tum Tum Stakes?
Well, they say the odds are on Mrs. Langtry.
Okay, everyone. Who's for going out for a night on the town?
Oh, yes, I'm for it.
What about you, Sutherland?
Yes, I'm on.
Her Grace of Manchester, perhaps?
Oh, yes, yes.
And Beautiful Mary.
Delightful.
Where's it to be, then? Tremorne Gardens.
Evans Music Hall.
I would like to go to the Café Royal.
Ah, Mrs. Langtry wants her way with the Prince of Wales, and she shall have it.
All right, come on, Garden, Evans Music Hall, and finish up at the Café Royal.
Keppel, dear fellow, you'd better ride with Lady Fulmer. Mrs. Langtry and I will drive together.
An unemployed man, Bertie. Is that what you really call yourself,
You're very beautiful, my lily flower. So very beautiful. That would not dare to be your husband, would it?
Oh, no. Edward never comes home for tea.
Then he's very like me.
Do you think we were fated to meet Bertie?
Fated?
Oh, by some power of destiny.
I prefer to rely on good judgment. When Lord Ranelagh introduced us, I'm sure he wasn't thinking about destiny. He merely judged quite correctly that I'd fall in love with you on the spot.
Oh. What does love mean to you, Bertie, considering that you have everything else?
Beauty. It means beauty. I think I could do without gambling, racing, even eating if I had to. but not without the pleasure of beauty and love.
You would never have to, Bertie. You have such a good, kind soul.
You're a charming woman. No, Lily, one day you should either write a novel or go on the stage.
I'm already set up on a stage, Bertie.
Are you?
Ever since we met. My photograph in every newspaper and magazine. Crowds everywhere I drive, ride or walk, even when I'm alone without you.
Do you mind? So long as you charm your audience as you charm me.
Do you mind it? Do you think it harms you?
In the eyes of the people. You know, I sometimes don't care a damn what that monster thinks of me. When I think of what I do for them, hating every minute of it, my daily list of public engagements is a catalogue of futility and boredom. Attend grand military assault at arms and gymnastic display at Albert Hall in aid of widows and orphans of the Zulu War. Attend fancy fair in aid of French charities. Visit North London Collegiate School for Girls and present prizes.
Oh, but these are all very honourable social duties, my dear.
Not for the heir of the throne, for God's sake. Just recently, I asked the Queen for the Lord Lieutenancy of Ireland, something useful I could do. But the Queen... Well, there you are. Ich dien, I serve. Yes. And I have my needs as well.
And you have a wife who allows them to you.
My wife is the dearest creature in this world. You must be assured, Lily, that she's...
Oh, she's... A woman of the world?
She understands that I haven't a perfect nature.
Oh, perhaps you have, Bertie. At least for women. Perhaps that's exactly what you have got.
Ah, Lily, you have a wonderful nature, too.
Oh, is that all?
No. Everything I adore in women, everything I want, must have, and refuse to do without. Alex, my dear.
Who is it?
I knocked on your door.
Oh, Bertie, it's you.
Not ready yet, my love. When are we going to get to this charity ball?
What did you say, dear?
I don't know when you'll ever be punctual for anything, dearest. What if we were catching a train?
A train?
At Paddington Station.
Oh, what time are you leaving, Bertie?
Oh, dear. Never mind.
Oh, I'm so sorry. My hearing is very bad tonight.
But you look so lovely, my darling girl. So very lovely.
Late. They're very late. The Princess of Wales is always late, Lester.
Oh, my dear, do you see who has just arrived?
Surely not the Lantry.
The Jersey Lily and Mr. Lily Lantry. Oh. Now we are going to see something.
Oh, yes.
Oh. His Royal Highness, the of Wales. Her Royal Highness, the Princess of Wales.
Wait until the princess sees her.
Good evening, Lady Lonsdale. How nice to see you here.
Uh-huh.
Good evening, Lady Londonderry. Good evening, Duchess. Oh, how nice to be here. What a lovely ball, isn't it?
Mrs. Lantry.
Royal Highness.
How are you? I do hope we shall see you and your husband at Marlborough House again soon. Do come and sit with me for a little while, Mrs. Lantry, and we can have a pleasant chat.
I'm glad you found the time to come and see me, Bertie. I know your engagement book is very full.
I'm quite happy about that, Mama. In fact, I feel happy about most things at the moment.
Do you indeed? Well, I'm afraid I do not.
Oh, what is it, Mama?
Your plan to return to Paris.
The exhibition? Well, of course, the British section is a raging success.
Since our secret treaty with Turkey and our acquisition of Cyprus, we don't seem very popular with the French.
What about a little discreet diplomacy on my part?
I understand. Our ambassador in Paris has strictly advised you not to go back there.
But I love Paris. That means I love the French at the very best.
I don't see what you can do that might not be regarded by the Foreign Office as downright interference.
What's happened to the idea of diplomacy through marriage? Athis married to the Tsar's daughter, and our relations with Russia have never been worse.
That is entirely due to the Russo-Turkish War.
And the Congress of Berlin, as a result of it, has changed the shape of the Balkans. All those new boundaries and upheaval. Now it's Bismarck who worries me.
He worries many of us, including your sister Vicky and her husband. We utterly detest him. In fact, it would be much better if the old Kaiser were to pass on and Fritz and Vicky come to power in Germany.
Better still if we had a firm, practical friendship with our nearest and strongest neighbor, France.
You are very persistent, Bertie.
I know what I can do.
You think so.
So many of the things I do seem to displease you, Mama. Why not let me try something that might be useful?
Would it not be a little humiliating if the French president declined to discuss matters with the Prince of Wales?
I don't propose to see the president. It's Gambetta I want to talk to.
But he holds no office at all in the French government.
Léon Gambetta dominates the Chamber of Deputies. He's a leader of French public opinion, exactly the sort of man we should try to influence.
Oh, I don't know, Bertie. I don't know at all.
But you don't object to my having a try?
Would it be any use if I did?
Oh, now, please, Mama.
I know. You have always tried to be a good son to me. Despite your weaknesses, you have always tried. But I know that when you set your mind on something, my objections and counsels don't seem to mean very much.
But isn't it possible, Mama, that the time has come for you to start trusting me just a little?
Ah, milord, le baron Renfrew. What a pleasure. What an honor. Welcome again to the Café des Anglais.
Le cabinet particulier, patron.
Le grand 16, as usual. Everything is prepared for milord Renfrew, and Monsieur Gambetta awaits you. Good.
Splendid Porto, Monsieur Gambetta. Chateau Lafitte Rothschild. I've never tasted a more cordial wine.
On that alone, we seem to be agreed.
Well, now, on this matter of Britain's secret treaty with Turkey and the secession of Cyprus to us...
An act of great unfriendliness to France.
I quite see how you must think so. What about Le Chambertin for the next course? Napoleon's favorite wine. Mm-hmm.
Your Highness chooses wines as a statesman would choose allies.
Monsieur... I don't need to point out to a Frenchman of your patriotism and good judgment that Russia has sinister ambitions, and Russia has access to the Mediterranean through the Dardanelles.
That is true.
Then, Britain's possession of Malta isn't quite enough security in any future alliance between us and France, is it? With the French fleet at Toulon and the British at Malta, monsieur, our holding Cyprus surely makes us a much more effective junior partner of France in the Mediterranean.
When your Highness puts it so, with such a tact and diplomacy, it seems much easier to believe. But is the British government as friendly in spirit towards France as the Prince of Wales?
Governments change. The best interests of nations don't change. I want a cordial relationship between Britain and France. I don't mind how hard I have to work to get it.
I am touched by what you say. But why especially with the Republic of France?
Because between us, we're the two most civilized nations in Europe. Well, look at the rest of them. Russia, vast imperial ambitions towards the Balkans and India. Bismarck, dragging Germany towards domination of Europe, Oscar tagging along with Germany.
Yes.
So the idea grows on me, Monsieur Gambetta, that a balance of power is going to be the best hope of keeping the peace in Europe. That means the strongest possible entente between France and Britain.
I agree with you.
Ah.
There's only one thing. If you are a statesman and I another, it might be easier for us to achieve it together.
If I were king, I might certainly have more influence, but I'll do everything I can to persuade my mother and her ministers.
The Queen of England has more sympathy for Germany than France. Her daughter is the Crown Princess of Prussia, is she not?
The Queen might listen to me if she thought there was some agreement between us, Monsieur Gambetta.
There is total agreement between us.
That is all I wanted to hear.
I'll also tell you this, Monsieur le Prince. I like you. I think you have a good and sincere spirit and a noble purpose, which might indeed be of great benefit to the peace of Europe if it is realized. I therefore promise you that for as long as I live, I shall speak to France in favor of an entente cordiale with Britain.
No doubt, Your Majesty, that the Prince of Wales' diplomatic success with Gambetta in Paris was a real one.
It is kind of you to think so, Lord Salisbury.
Ma'am, as your foreign secretary, I know it to be so. The Prince has proved to me that he has purpose and a flair for diplomacy, which I hope Your Majesty will see fit to encourage.
I am so glad to hear you speak well of my dear son. I think, Lord Salisbury, that completes your report to me at present.
As Your Majesty pleases. Your permission to withdraw, ma'am?
I shall look forward to your next audience. Good day, Lord Salisbury.
Ma'am.
Your Royal Highness.
Mama. Lord Salisbury, why didn't you allow me to be present?
You have your own opportunities of seeing him, have you not, Bertie?
I'd have thought that after my success with Gambetta, you might have started to think better of me and include me in your audiences, especially with the Foreign Secretary.
My dear Bertie, your success, if you can call it so, with Monsieur Gambetta, is, to say the least, a very doubtful one. It may come to something, it may not.
But
your idea of an entente with France might lead to much trouble with Germany and Austria.
So you give me no hope at all that you'll ever consider me worthy of a place on your council?
Greater responsibilities must come with greater maturity.
Mama, I am now 38.
Some minds come to maturity very much later than others.
I see. So the wheels go back in the old ruts.
And what does that mean?
I was driving through the East End the other day. I passed a group of unemployed men lounging on a street corner with their idle hands wretchedly stuffed in their pockets. I remember thinking to myself, what the devil can those poor fellows do with themselves? And then I noticed they were standing outside a gin shop and the doors opened as I went by.
There is a great deal I do not understand in what you say to me, Bertie.
I am aware of that, Mama.
Never mind about gin shops and the deserving poor. There's your family, Bertie. Your relations all over Europe. We must keep ties with them. And who else is there but you to do it?
You mean I should be content to hop from one court to the other and find an occupation in that?
Your father would have expected it of you.
Oh.
What more do you want?
Well, Uncle Bertie, look at me.
Do look at him, Bertie. Willie's wearing the kilt you brought him.
By God, so he is.
It suits me, the Balmoral tartan, eh? Eh? look at me.
Prussian salute does not suit the kilt, Willie. Too stiff.
No, he hasn't quite got the way it ought to swing, has he?
Never mind, dear boy. How does it feel to be married?
It is my duty to my country.
Yes, of course.
We're so glad you were able to come to Willie's wedding, dear Bertie.
Well, after all, Willie came to mine, Vicky.
Such a tiny boy he was. Look at him now.
And look at you, Uncle Bertie.
Is it tum-tum they call you in England? Tum-tum, eh? Well, you lead a gay life, huh?
I take my relaxation when I get the time.
I hear you like Paris, Uncle Bertie. You like the French. I don't like the French. They are degenerate and ignoble people.
Are they indeed?
You mustn't pay too much attention to all Willie says. His friends in the army, well, I think sometimes they're rather bigoted.
If you please, Mama. The Prussian army is the best and most disciplined in the world. And the officer corps is the pride of our nation. At least they are gentlemen. Can you say that, Uncle Bertie, for all those Jews you seem to be friendly with these days?
Yes, Willie. For all of them.
I thought they were merely rich.
And wise. Cultured. With pleasant, quiet voices.
I'm rather glad to have this chance of a quiet talk with you, Uncle. I am much younger than you, but I think we can converse as equals.
You do.
Like you, I am heir to a throne.
Remember that your grandfather is still alive, won't you, Willie?
My grandfather, the Kaiser, is very old and feeble. I am 19. I foresee my great responsibilities even after you and Papa have gone, Mama. Should I not do so?
I suppose it's very like you to do so.
I wish to talk to the future King of England as a future Emperor of Germany. Is that forbidden?
Not at all. Most interesting.
The British and German people have the same Saxon inheritance. We belong to the Aryan race.
What about it?
Now, why do you make such a fuss of the French, Uncle? Why are you so busy trying to get England involved in some kind of alliance with that totally untrustworthy people who were once your greatest enemies and are no friends of Germany?
Perhaps it would be a little difficult to make you understand, Willie.
It certainly would. If Britain and France made a serious alliance, there would be no alternative but for Germany to make a pact with Russia and greatly increase the German navy.
Yeah.
Willie, I don't think this is the way to talk to your uncle.
Then what is the way to talk to him? I say nothing with disrespect. You know how much I love England, Uncle Bertie. It would surprise you. Particularly, I love my grandmama, Victoria. For her, I have the deepest reverence and respect. I hope we shall be able to speak on serious matters again before you leave us, Uncle.
And damn it, he was wearing the kilt.
Oh, you mustn't take him too seriously, Bertie.
He should turn at Evans Music Hall.
Well, Willie's only a boy.
A boy who'll one day become one of the most powerful authoritarian monarchs in Europe, complete with all his prejudices.
It's your talk with Bismarck the other day. Willie thinks it's the start of an English conspiracy in Berlin, just as your meeting with Gambetta was in Paris.
Bismarck hardly listened to a word I said, which is extraordinary, since although the whole of Europe knows Mama gives me nothing important to do and never takes me into her confidence, I've recently become a trustee of the British Museum.
So your relations with Mama are still the same.
Don't her letters to you make that quite clear?
She's never forgiven you.
Forgiven me? For what, Vicky?
Why, nothing. Well, for not doing better as a scholar when you were young, I suppose.
You the scholar, Vicky. I might have had other abilities, though, which could have been more useful to the country.
You have those abilities, Bertie.
But by the time I'm in a position to use them as I want to, I'm afraid the opportunity will have gone.
What do you mean?
If Father hadn't died when he did, and Mama not gone into seclusion, I think England might have been a republic by now.
Bertie!
Oh, yes. Papa was trying to make an autocrat of her. It's the only way he could see the idea of a monarchy. If he'd lived, there might have been some kind of revolution.
What?
Yes. But what worries me now, Vicky, is that if she hangs on much longer, how many real prerogatives of the crown will there be left for me to use as usefully and constructively as I know I could? The longer she lasts, the more radical and republican opinions are going to grow.
Bertie, you said the longer she lasts.
I did? But I was only thinking of abdication. I swear to God I was.
you are, Mama, dearest.
You are not too tired.
More overcome, Alex. Quite overcome.
Oh, darling, Mama. What a day it's been for you. Are you sure you're not too tired?
I'm only overcome by the people's most touching display of joy and quite heartwarming devotion towards an old lady.
Towards their victorious and dutiful sovereign after 50 years of service to them.
Look at you all. My family all round me again. My children and grandchildren. My descendants from all over Europe down to the third generation. Am I right, Bertie?
Yes, Mama. They're all here.
And in the Abbey, do you know what I felt? The presence of the entire empire, all those millions were with me too. It was very, very touching and most inspiring. And you, Bertie, dear, always at my side, organizing everything. I know what it meant to you, helping and supporting me, trying to take your father's place.
Trying, perhaps not quite.
Vicky, I am concerned about your husband. He looks very splendid in his white uniform, quite Wagnerian, but very, very exhausted.
Yes, sir. I'm afraid Fritz is a little tired.
I want to talk to him.
Well, don't tire him, Mama. The doctor said he must use his voice as little as possible.
What is the answer, Vicky?
We don't know. Not a happy one, I'm afraid. I'm afraid that... I'm sorry, Bertie. I can't speak about it now.
Oh. My God. My God. Willie. It's going to be Willie.
Well, Uncle Bertie. At least my charming cousins, more than Beatrice, are kind enough to talk to me.
It wasn't my intention to ignore you, Willie.
What do you think of my poor father?
Yes.
He's very, very ill. There's something terrible in his throat. The doctors say they may have to take it away.
Willie, I don't think this is the time to be quite so depressing.
And look at Grandmama. She looks so well. Oh, poor Papa. Strange if he didn't outlive my Grandpapa. Then I would come to my empire before you came to yours, Uncle Bertie.
That's what I... But I don't think you ought to say, Willie.
Then perhaps you would not ignore me.
I can see it would be immensely difficult.
Then you would try to listen to my ideas, hmm? Try to understand my ambitions for Germany, hmm? I shall one day have much greater power than Grandmama. It may be soon.
Now I'm sure there won't be an occasion like this again until Bertie's coronation.
Or mine, Uncle Bertie. What if it were mine?
What is it, Bertie? You look so fierce, my dear. What has Willie just said?
In his own inimitable way, Vicky. He has said the last thing possible that might encourage Uncle Bertie to be good.
Well, well, Sir Francis Knowles. Welcome to the Inferno, Knowles.
How are you, Lord Beresford?
As you see, he's sweating nicely. But it doesn't need a Turkish bath to make me do that these days, as you can imagine. By the way, are you speaking to me?
I know everything, and I sympathize. But you have a good friend in the Prince of Wales.
Yes, one would think so.
Well, surely, if it were not for his intervention...
I'd have been tossed out of the government without the privilege of resigning decently, and I wouldn't have got back my command in the Navy. Not without the intervention of the Prince of Wales.
Things could have been worse for you. So what now are your doubts?
I still have a concern for Daisy, Lady Brooke.
Since the Prince has taken her under his protection.
Do you think Lady Brooke's good name will be any safer in Bertie's hands?
The last suggestion I would accept from anyone who knows the Prince as well as I do is that he is not a man of honor.
He's a man of pleasure.
I'm sorry to hear you speak like that.
Even you can't deny that public respect for the Prince of Wales isn't what it used to be. Especially after the recent Baccarat affair that got him dragged as a witness into a court of law. Ich dien, I deal. That's what they say now, isn't it?
What real understanding does the public have of its royal idols? Why is it always more ready to condone weakness in the lesser ranks of men? The weakness that frustration alone creates.
I've known him best as a great companion, never wanted a better. But I've watched him lower his sights in the past few years. By God, I have. So I'm only wondering, if he could deal with the shady cheats who play baccarat with him at Tranby Croft, well, perhaps he's not above palming a deuce or two on his best friends.
Daisy. Well, my dearest Daisy, you said there was something you wanted me to do for you.
Oh, my dearest, kindest Bertie.
What is it you want me to do?
A little while ago, I wrote Charles Beresford a letter. I ought never to have written it.
Sounds serious.
You know I was terribly distressed and angry when he left me.
But since then, quite consoled.
Yes, Bertie. But it was you who sent Charles away.
My dear, Charles has been a good friend of mine for 30 years. I had to do something to help him out of the scrape he got himself into over you.
I know.
It seems to have worked out very well, for Charles is now reconciled with his wife, and I've gained a beautiful and interesting friend.
Unfortunately, Bertie, I had already written the letter.
What about this letter?
I wrote it in a passion. It was directly after he told me he was leaving me. I reproached him. I reminded him of everything that has passed between us, everything. If that letter were ever published, Bertie, you would not dare to be my friend any longer.
But, Daisy, surely Lord Beresford has had the wit to destroy the letter by now.
He never received it.
What?
His wife got hold of it first. By accident, of course.
Oh.
She has given it to her solicitor. I have been threatened and humiliated. I know how much Lady Beresford hates me. I know she will use that letter against me at the first opportunity.
This is very serious. What do you want me to do?
Use your influence somehow to have that letter destroyed. Otherwise...
Otherwise, I might lose you. My dear, beautiful Daisy. I need you too much for that. I need you.
Help me, Bertie.
Of course.
I appeal to you.
Of course, my dear, don't worry. I shall arrange everything.
I'm told, Bertie, that Lord Charles Beresford has called to see you.
I'm about to have him shown in now, madam.
Why has he come?
Oh, probably to say his goodbyes before he leaves to join his ship in the Med.
Is that all?
Well, for what other reason?
What did you say?
Do use your ear trumpet, my dear. We are alone together.
Oh, sorry.
That's better. I said, for what other reason would Charles want to see me?
Lady Charles is no longer invited to Marlborough House, is she?
Lady Charles happens to have displeased me intensely.
Perhaps I feel the same about Lady Brooke, who is continually invited here and received at court.
Why should Lady Brooke not be welcomed everywhere as a good friend of ours?
Not of mine, Bertie.
I wish you could arrange to change that, Alex. It would please me so much. You know I love you best of all.
Yet you still want me to receive Lady Brooke with her odor of notoriety while I appear to support you in ostracizing Lady Beresford, a completely innocent woman.
She is not innocent, of causing me the most intolerable annoyance.
Bertie, I dread your entanglement with Daisy Brooke. Twice you've been publicly involved in the most unfortunate scandals. And had to appear as a witness in a court of law.
You think my reputation can't stand any more of that sort of thing, do you?
It cannot, Bertie. It cannot.
Well, don't worry about Daisy Brooke. Her husband isn't likely to sue for a divorce. Too civilized.
I still ask you...
What?
Find someone else I could more easily accept at Marlborough House.
Good God, my dear sweet Alex, you go on as though my friendships meant no more to me than back here, a bottle of good wine. What am I supposed to be made of?
Oh.
I
enjoy Lady Brooke's companionship. She's intelligent and witty. She amuses me. Damn it, that dustman! Has his private life awfully done with collecting the public's garbage? Am I no right to mine just because I'm a prince when my public life is so tedious?
Is that how you would talk if you suddenly found yourself king?
What has my present existence got to do with being king? So why shouldn't I enjoy my useless life as I wish?
Well, if you won't listen to me, Bertie, I suppose I had better go.
Damn it. The whole thing's infuriating.
Will you receive Lord Charles Beresford now, Your Highness?
Yes. Please ask him to come in. Good afternoon, Charles. How are you?
Your Royal Highness?
Well, so you're off to the Med. Very good of you to come and say your goodbyes.
I didn't come for that, sir.
Indeed?
I came because of my intense concern at leaving my wife in an intolerable situation. A situation your Royal Highness could alter as soon as you pleased.
What are you talking about, Charles?
The ostracism of Lady Beresford from the society of people to whom she rightfully belongs. People who have quite unjustly been given the lead by the Prince of Wales, and therefore dare not ignore it.
I think you'd better calm yourself before we go on. Look here, Charles. Lady Brooke's letter to you should have been destroyed. I went twice to see your wife and tried to persuade her to destroy it. Then you said you tried to get her to destroy it. She told me I was interfering and she resented it. Do you really think that was reasonable of her?
At least she was guilty of nothing. And no man of honor could tolerate seeing the humiliation she's going through now.
Aren't you forgetting that you might have very little honor left yourself if you hadn't taken my friendly advice to resign from the government and return to active service?
Yes, you encouraged me to give up my political career and return to my wife, whom you then proceeded to ruin socially for the most cowardly reason.
What do you mean by that?
Can you blame me, sir, for suspecting that your so-called advice was given not so much out of friendly concern for me as from your intention of taking Daisy Brooke for yourself?
You dare to speak to me like that? Don't you realize it's your own contemptible inability to control your wife that's placed her in the situation you're now complaining of?
By God,
you must not strike me!
You blackguard. You coward.
Be quiet. You must go.
You blackguarded me. You blackguarded my
wife. Get out.
It was a mistake. Don't forget how much I know about your Royal Highness's private affairs.
I have told you to go, Lord Beresford.
And I tell you, sir, but I shall demand reparation on my wife's behalf and go on demanding it. Feigning satisfaction, I warn your Royal Highness that I shall use every means I have to bring your conduct to the notice of the public. Good day to you, sir.
I deeply regret that it should have come to this, Lord Salisbury, that you, as Prime Minister, should find yourself involved in this wretched business on my behalf.
I can only do my best, sir. If Lord Beresford insists on publicity, it can do you untold harm.
I shall never forgive him. He's trying to blackguard me and force me into being disloyal to someone I'm very fond of and owe protection to.
You would therefore not consider clearing up the matter by a few discreet moves in a certain direction?
You mean put all the blame on Lady Brooke by having her excluded from court? Certainly not.
I thought as much.
To be followed by an apology to Lord Beresford. That's what he'd demand if I conceded an inch.
What a pity it is that the Prince of Wales's reputation stands to suffer so much damage over so trivial and sordid a matter.
You are being very outspoken, Lord Salisbury.
Only because I think of the harm this matter could do your Royal Highness in the field of your other abilities.
You mean where I lay foundation stones and open exhibitions?
I did not mean that.
You were once very encouraging, Lord Salisbury, in the view you took of my interest in diplomacy and foreign affairs. I thought myself I could do some good. I tried. Some of the effort I made was set back when Léon Gambetta died and my proposal for an entente with France came to nothing.
I think the future will take care of that and your own renewed efforts when the moment is right.
Confidentially, Salisbury, my hopes of being able to contribute anything much to the future peace of Europe came to an end when my nephew, Wilhelm, became Kaiser. You know what I mean by that.
I do, indeed.
The Queen still refuses to take me into her confidence. I'm still not treated as the heir to the throne. Is it surprising that my sense of responsibility may have become a little blurred when I look at the futility of my existence?
It shocks me to hear your highness say that. It's not true.
Isn't it? In about a month, I shall be 50 years old. That 50 years I've spent in a dynastic nursery. Oh, what else? While my mother goes on and on, and opportunities are missed that I'd never have missed if I'd had the authority of a king.
I'm quite sure that there will always be occasions in the future for you to serve your country, sir, in that special way for which your character and personality so uniquely suit you. That is why I'm so anxious to avert the catastrophe of a public scandal now.
So am I. But at least I hope I've made it clear what I'm not prepared to do to prevent it.
But if some sort of concession could put matters right, surely, for the sake of your family, for the sake of the Princess of Wales...
I'm afraid it's too late for that.
Too late?
I suppose it's obvious why my wife left to stay with her parents when this affair started. She's now gone on to stay with her sister, the Empress of Russia, and I don't expect her back in the foreseeable future.
For God's sake, sir, surely not an estrangement.
It appears so.
Oh, dear, dear, dear. This makes matters so much worse.
One can't even go to a charity bazaar these days without the air being full of it.
Full of what, my dear Duchess?
Gossip about that dreadful Brooke Beresford scandal, of course. Including the most uncharitable remarks about the Prince of Wales.
What are the latest developments? Have you heard?
Well, I have heard that Lord Charles Beresford is threatening to publish a pamphlet.
A pamphlet?
Giving every detail about the affair. And the most scandalous facts about other incidents in the Prince of Wales' private life.
Oh, the poor, poor Queen. And on top of this, the news of Prince George being desperately ill with typhoid.
Ah, yes. The royal drains have claimed yet another victim at Sandringham.
Very sad. But I'm inclined to regard it as something of an ironic judgment on the Prince of Wales for his leadership of society.
I agree that what goes on in society these days is most comparable with the apparent state of the drains at Sandringham.
At least the Duke of York's illness brings the Princess of Wales hurrying home from Russia.
I expect it's the only thing that could. I would not blame her if it were.
Oh, I pray for her sake that she arrives in time.
Well, Bertie?
I'm so glad you came back to be with him. Thank you, Alex.
When your telegraph arrived, I was afraid I might not be in time.
He's not too well, Alex. He's not too well.
Well, I knew as if the worst happened, you should not be on your own. Neither should I.
No, my darling.
I came back to be with you, Bertie, to stand by you. I know that is what I must do.
Thank you, my love.
Oh, when I left you, I was so hurt and angry. Perhaps I did not intend to return. Then I thought of you, alone here at Sandringham on your 50th birthday, surrounded by so much trouble and worry. I thought I could not be so cruel.
You? Cruel?
Do you remember how I nursed you here when you had the typhoid years ago?
Mm.
Well, now I shall nurse Georgie like that, and when he's better, it will be you again.
Nurse me.
Mm. Yes, Bertie. I have decided it is a kind of nursing you need.
Mm.
I shall not leave you alone again.
Alex.
In a moment of such crisis, it's no use not being frank about the facts, Lord Salisbury.
No, ma'am.
That is what we intend to be. You have Lord Beresford's letter to you, Bertie.
Lord Salisbury has my ma'am.
Kindly remind us of the facts it states.
To begin with, Lord Beresford denies that there is a pamphlet in circulation which...
Which I happen to know there is. A damn scurrilous pamphlet that casts the most slanderous suspicions on my private life and conduct.
Of which not one fact is true, of course.
It does not need to be, ma'am.
No. It is quite enough, I suppose, for the wretched thing to be published. What else does Lord Beresford say?
That he has divined a direct intention on the prince's part to damage his wife and wants an apology.
What are his exact words?
I now demand an apology from your Royal Highness, failing which I shall no longer intervene to prevent these matters becoming public.
Well, Prime Minister, what do you suggest as a solution to this horrible affair?
I suggest that some sort of agreement is imperative, ma'am, that His Royal Highness must be prepared to make some sort of concession as a basis for reaching an agreement.
Would a concession on your part, Bertie, be quite out of the question?
What does Lord Salisbury suggest?
I think the temporary exclusion of Lady Brooke from court would have to precede any negotiation. And then I think a formal exchange of letters to be drafted by myself.
And you would say?
I think Lord Beresford could be induced to write to your Highness in respectful terms, demanding a formal apology for the public injury Lady Beresford feels she has suffered over your support for Lady Brooke.
And what would I have to answer?
Something to the effect that you regret Lady Beresford believed it to be your intention publicly to wound her feelings, that you never had any such intention, and you regret she should have been led to an erroneous impression in the matter.
And the effect of this?
I feel sure that Lord Beresford would prefer such an apology to the alternative he threatens, because that would mean the sacrifice of his career and good name. In fact, it would do him as much harm as it would your Royal Highness.
I'm afraid I cannot agree to your suggestion, Lord Salisbury. No apology on my part, no matter how discreetly it is worded, can ever be possible. No apology, do you understand?
Lord Salisbury, you will kindly leave us.
Ma'am.
I wish to speak to my son alone. I will recall you presently for his final answer.
Very well, Your Majesty.
Mama, that was my final answer.
Was it indeed?
Mama, you cannot expect of me...
What can I not expect of you? All that your father warned me to expect of you has come true.
My father...
Yes, Bertie. If it were not for you, he might have been alive today.
Mama, what do you mean?
You broke his heart. That's what I mean. Over just such another sordid scandal as you're trying to break mine with now.
Dear God, no.
Your father caught his fatal illness only because he was trying to guide you and save you from your own folly while you were at Cambridge. You remember that? You got yourself into disgrace yet again. Albert was already sick. Sick at heart as he was in health when he heard about it. Yet he left his bed to go to you. That is what killed your father. That. And nothing else.
You're saying I killed him. For all these years you thought that and never forgiven me.
Yes, Bertie. I had forgiven you long ago for his sake.
But not enough. Not enough to trust me, take me into your confidence completely, to have given me another kind of life.
What kind
of
life?
You know, Mama, you know I've had to live the life I've been given to lead. Not what I'd have chosen.
But you see, Bertie, you might have done better with that if you'd had the strength to overcome your own weaknesses.
My weaknesses?
Not your fault. Not your fault, I expect. One inherits even the shape of one's face.
But if you'd only give me the chance to find a better purpose...
Oh, Bertie. Can you imagine what my feelings have been all these years? To know that you, my eldest son, so carefully, so aspiringly taught and educated, in the hope that you might reflect even a tenth part of your dear father's perfection, and so have been able to take his place at my side. Can you imagine what it has meant to me to realize that, perhaps through no fault of your own, you would never possess the nature or the character to share the burdens I have to bear that he shared with me. This I have accepted.
Now more than ever.
Yes. I see, Mama. I only wonder what your thoughts must be on the prospect of my ever becoming king.
That you will sometimes be as fortunate in your advices as I have sometimes been. Although I fear that British politics will never again produce another Lord Melbourne, another Disraeli, and I hope certainly not another Gladstone. Mm. I fear Lord Salisbury is being kept waiting, Bertie. Mm. What are we to tell him?
What do you expect me to tell him now?
It must be your decision. I can only appeal to you to think what your father might have advised.
Mm. Please ask Lord Salisbury to come in, Mama. I shall agree to everything he has suggested.
Of course I understand, Bertie. But your humiliation at having to apologize to Charles Beresford must be so much greater than mine at being excluded from court.
It's only for a while, my dear Daisy, only for a while.
Oh, you've been through so much for my sake, I know.
For your sake, of course, my dear.
You are so very loyal to your friends, Bertie.
Maybe that's my only virtue.
Well, it is all over now, and nothing has really changed. Has it?
You are quite right. Nothing has changed. I must merely go on doing my best with the work I'm given and go on being bored to death by most of it.
And your pleasures, Bertie?
The pleasures? Ah, those I'm still free to take as I choose. I do not wish to be unoccupied, and I hate dining alone. See to it that some kind friend knows I'm free for a really good party tomorrow night.
Oh, my dear. Tum-tum for dinner at only 24 hours' notice.
Of course it can be arranged. It must be arranged.
Grilled oysters and poulet norvégien, cold quails and quails à la grecque, côtelettes de bécassine à la Suvorov, partridges stuffed with truffles...
Royal Highness is now at Marienbad. Coffee and boiled egg for breakfast. Oh. Not more than 2 cigars a day.
I'm quite able to be strict with myself, Herr Doctor. Quite able.
Mama, is that fat, pop-eyed old gentleman really the Prince of Wales?
God bless you, Bertie.
God bless the Prince of Wales!
Yes, it is very pleasant to win the Grand National, the 2,000 guineas, the Newmarket Stakes, the Derby, the Eclipse Stakes, the St. Ledger, and not to count one's losses. One's eldest son, one's sister, one's brother, one's youth, many friends, many hopes. But thank God, not one's mamma. Not one's mamma.
The Prince of Wales will be sorry to hear how ill I am. Do you think he ought to be told?
It was kind of you, Uncle Bertie, to come from Osborne to meet me. Mm. Especially as no one invited me. You look well in our Prussian uniform. You think Grandmama would like it if I wore the kilt?
I don't think she'd notice, William.
So, as bad as that. Thank God I came. Why didn't you inform me sooner?
I was not informed myself until the day before yesterday.
How like Grandmama. What is coming? The end of something mighty and magnificent?
No.
I know what you're thinking. At last, you're thinking.
What?
At last.
That is a repellent thing to say.
We must be friends. Not glare at each other over the corpse. Mm. She would wish us to be friends. A pity about the British Constitution, though.
What did you say?
With equal power, you and I could change the face of Europe. Still, if it will be all you can do, you must look to Germany for friendship and strength. To me, blood is thicker than water.
For God's sake, William. The Queen is still with us.
Did you hear how the British people cheered me when we were driving together from the station? They will cheer me again. How soon are we leaving for Osborne? Let us waste no time. I am ready.
Your Royal Highness may go in now.
Oh, is the Queen?
You must be prepared that she may not know you.
Mama. Mama, it's Bertie.
Bertie.
Grandmama. Yes, Grandmama, it's Willie. I am here.
Yes. Willie's here too, Mama. We're all here.
I'm afraid, Your Royal Highness, we have to accept that Her Majesty's life is drawing to a close.
How long? What can I do?
I see what must be done. Grandmama finds it hard to breathe. She must be lifted up. My arm on this side under the pillow. Here, Doctor, your arm on the other side, please. Now, we lift. So.
So, it may be ours.
Then it shall be ours.
Willie, your arm must be very tired. Let me take your place.
Do you not see? There's no need. It is over now.
Long live King Edward the Seventh!
At Windsor being scrapped and replaced with your own, and the Queen hardly a month in her grave.
What is this? Statuette of John Brown. Another. And another. Melt them down.
Yes, sir.
And these. Elephant tusks. Stacks of mouldering. What?
It's from an African chief, sir.
Tribute of an African chief. Get rid of them. All these marble figures, who are they? Grandchildren, cousins, dogs? And John Brown again, to the attics with them.
Yes, sir.
What's this? Bits of panoply from India, rotting. Moths, scores of moths. Austrian feathers. Dust, that's all. Dust, out with the lot. Get this tomb cleaned up. Papa's bedroom.
Oh,
good God, a shrine. Everything exactly as it was when he died 40 years ago. Even the bottles of medicine by the bed. Perhaps my life started here in this bed. Perhaps I should leave it all as it is.
Your mother and I are very disappointed in you.
Oh.
This is the memorandum I have presented to your tutor, Bertie. Oh. One, appearance, deportment, and dress. Two, manners and conduct towards others.
Oh.
Three, the power to acquit oneself creditably in conversation.
Oh.
As for your education, I have prepared for you the strictest possible regimen of study. You are required to make yourself proficient in chemistry, Greek and Roman history, mathematics, literature, philosophy, science and history.
No.
The Prince of Wales must be induced to devote some of his leisure time to music, to the fine arts, to hearing poetry, amusing books or good plays, read aloud.
Someone open these windows immediately.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Now, I want this room cleared. Everything out. Everything in this room is to be changed. I am going to use it for my own.
In Bertie by Lydia Ragazin, the Prince of Wales was played by Freddie Jones, Queen Victoria by Hilda Schroeder, and Princess Alexandra by Diana Olsen. Prince Albert, Stephen Thorne, Princess Helena and Princess Victoria, Leon Orkin. Lord Charles Beresford, Vernon Joyner, Sir Francis Knowles, David Timpson, Charlotte Knowles, Dorrit Wells. Lily Langtry, Caroline Hunt, Leon Gambetta, Brian Haynes, Lord Salisbury, Dennis McCarthy, Prince Wilhelm of Prussia, Nigel Anthony, Lady Brooke, Rosalind Shanks, and the Doctor, William Slay. The play was produced by Margaret Ettall.